Sir Edwin Arnold said, God can't always be everywhere, so he invented mothers. I like that. There is something about God that can only be revealed through a mom. Us men don't have the capacity to reveal certain attributes and characteristics of God Himself. And so God reveals Himself through moms. Somebody once said that motherhood's the most important job on earth and is in fact supported by all other jobs. I tend to think that's true. I'm not going to turn this morning to Proverbs 31. if you don't understand what that means, just suffice it to say this, that Proverbs 31 is a stretch of scripture that women everywhere have universally come to hate. You can look it up later. I'm going to do something a lot more risky than that. I'm going to actually attempt to talk about the pressures of being a mom in the 21st century. Now, I understand that me talking about being a mom in the 21st century is about like Lady Gaga talking about modesty. But if you don't understand that, Google it. No, don't Google it. Don't Google it. I'm sorry. Don't Google it. For decades, women have been working their way through the pressure of, do I work outside the home? Do I not work outside the home? Some say if you stay home, you're a weak-minded person who left behind is being left behind by a modern world. Some say if you work, there are people with no sense of compassion or understanding about women who have that role in the workplace. Some perceive their role at home. Some perceive their role at work. Some are not where they think they should be. But one common thread usually runs through every mom's soul. Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the right thing? Whatever it is it the right thing? Is it enough? Is it on time? On top of that, the single parent rate is skyrocketing in America, and the overwhelming majority of those are moms. And so often when pressure rises in society, it tends to rest right on the shoulders of moms. Moms tend to be, in a society, the gap fillers, the pillars that hold the bridges up, the one that the weight rests on. The bottom line is many moms feel the pressure to live up to something that you're not, that God never intended you to be. Some ideal portrait, a Stepford wife, Stepford mom, some ideal portrait of what a wife or a mother should be. Pop entertainment and magazines and the internet, they haven't helped in this regard at all. Pressure to be the ideal height and the ideal weight and attractive all the time and always in control and a perfect mom whose children never screams, never throws a fit in the aisle at Walmart, never gets dirt on their clothes. Now, I want you to understand that part of the reason that pressure exists so strongly in our culture is because that women in our culture are valued first for their physical appearance and then for other characteristics. So our values are out of order. And when that happens, it creates feelings of intense inadequacy. I don't know a mom who hasn't at some point had intense feelings of inadequacy about her appearance or about her mothering skills or about her spirituality, or all three. Now, for the last several weeks, we've been on this series called God Encounters, and we're going to finish that series next Sunday. But today, what I want to do is I want to take a few minutes. I want to look at a lady in Scripture who had an encounter with God. And I want to look at the encounter with God that she had and see some things inside her encounter that can change a mom's life. That an experience so powerful that when you bring all that you are up against all that God is, change, transformation happens and things begin to happen. The story starts like this. There was a man named Elkanah. He had two wives. One of them had children and the other wife didn't have children. You think men are competitive, you ought to watch women. The radar comes out, followed shortly by the fangs. So you can see the dark clouds gathering. This is the wife that didn't have children's name was Hannah. Her story is found in 1 Samuel chapter 1. I'm going to read several verses, but what I want you to do is I want you to look for this lady Hannah as I read this story, her husband Elkanah, and then the other woman who was in the story who at that point was the other wife. Two ladies married to the same man. One had children, the other one couldn't. And so you can imagine how this might play out. Verse 4, whenever the day came for Elkanah to sacrifice, he would give portions of the meat to his wife Peninnah and to all her sons and daughters, but to Hannah he gave a double portion, listen to this, because he loved her and because the Lord had closed her womb. And because the Lord had closed her womb, her rival kept provoking her in order to irritate her. Wow. This went on year after year. Whenever Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, her rival provoked her until she wept and would not eat. Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, Hannah, why are you weeping? Why don't you eat? Why are you downhearted? Don't I mean more to you than 10 sons? Sounds like typical male advice. Isn't my brilliance and fabulousness enough to satisfy you? You actually have needs that I can't meet? Wow. We'll deal with that on Father's Day. Once when they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, Hannah stood up. Now Eli the priest was sitting on a chair by the doorpost of the Lord's temple. In bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. And she made a vow saying, O Lord Almighty, if you will only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life and no razor will ever be used on his head. As she kept on praying to the Lord, Eli observed her mouth. Hannah was praying in her heart and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. In the culture that Hannah lived in our culture, a woman is valued first by her appearance and then other characteristics. In the culture that Hannah lived in, a woman was valued first by her ability to have children and then by other characteristics. I think it's difficult for any of us in this room, male or female, to fathom the pressure that Hannah felt. The outright worthlessness that she felt because she wasn't able to give her husband any children. The overwhelming humiliation that would come at her when the other wife would harass her and make fun of her. No doubt, she couldn't live up to the perceived concept of who she was supposed to be. Hannah came in such violent desperation to God in prayer that when she went to pray, tears came out, but no words came out. And that violent desperation was driven by her inability to have children. But listen to this, I think it was also clearly driven by something else. Intense feelings of inadequacy. Not just, can I have a son? Not just, can I have a child? But she was battling with deep feelings of inadequacy. Now, this is something that every mom in the room can identify with. As society's pressure grows higher and higher and life's responsibility squeezes you, the feeling of inadequacy tends to continue to rise with those things. But that intense moment of pouring her heart out in prayer to God became to Hannah an encounter with God. An encounter with God that changed her life. She was at the end of her rope, but God was just about to start. She thought it was over, and it was only the beginning. And that intense moment, God heard her cry, answered her prayer, and it wasn't long that Hannah had a son that she named Samuel, which is the name of the book we're reading from, 1 and 2 Samuel. Now, if you're taking notes this morning, what can we learn from Hannah's encounter with God? Number one, bring your inadequacies to God. Bring your inadequacies to God. Hannah was so hurt that she prayed and cried and her mouth moved, but nothing came out. Now, let's just talk for a minute. You come home from work, you open the door, your wife's sitting on the couch with a remote control in her hand and a little box of chocolate ice cream in the other. and she's got that look on her face. Her eyes are red and tears are coming down. And when she looks at you, her mouth moves, but nothing comes out. Pray hard. But don't pray out loud. She'll think you're talking about her. Pray hard. This is what happened to Hannah and her husband. Hannah's in there in the inner chamber and she is crying out to God. Her soul is wrenched. Her soul is twisted. Her soul is broken. She's being harassed by this other woman in her life and she has nowhere to turn, but she turns to God. Now, I just want to say this to you. Bring your inadequacies to God. It's good. Listen to me, Mom, this morning. It's good for you to talk to your husband. It's good for you to talk to a friend. It's good to talk to other people. But you have to understand there comes a time when you have to take what's wrenching your soul to God. Sometimes you can depend on your husband to do things that only God can do. Now look at verse 5. How did her husband deal with this? But to Hannah, he gave a double portion because he loved her and the Lord had closed her womb. You know what this is? This is the original, if she hurts, feed her. They didn't have chocolate, so he gave meat. Here, have two lambs. Side of beef, some sausage. It didn't help. But when it came down to answers, dealing with grief, pouring out her soul, she had nowhere else to go, so she went to God. Now, I'm not saying that because it will... Now, just listen to me for a minute. I'm not saying that because it will spare your husband the conversation. I'm saying that because there's some stuff he can't help you on. There's some stuff he can't do nothing about. There's some stuff he can't change even when he wants to. There are some things that nobody can help you with, and when you keep bringing them to him, you're putting stress on the marriage that it doesn't need. I'm saying there's a time that there's nobody else you can go to but God. There comes a point of desperation where you come to grips with the reality that there are a few issues in life you really are all alone about, and your husband doesn't understand it. He's not going to understand, and there's one person and one person alone that can help you, and it's God. And when you get to that point, you're right on the edge with an encounter with God. You're right on the edge of confronting the God who loves you and can help you, who can see you through, who can do a miracle. You may say, well, you know, I've tried praying before. I've tried that before, but nothing happened. I want to say to you in that moment, on the trigger of desperation when you're ready to give in, I'm telling you, if you don't give up, like Hannah, I don't know if you were to go back to verse 3 and understand how long this went on, but the Bible, 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 3 says, year after year after year after year after year after year. I'm saying to you, if you don't give up, God won't quit on you. If you don't quit on Him, He won't quit on you. If you do quit, start again. Because I'm saying to you, there comes a moment on the trigger of desperation when you're ready to give up. I'm saying to you, God will come through. He'll pour out strength on you right in your time of need. If you will give total dependency to Him on the need that you have, bring that inadequacy to Him. And I'm telling you, you will find that in the presence of God, you are adequate, you are blood-bought, you are a woman of God. Furthermore, you're a daughter of the King. You don't have to be successful. You don't have to be a perfect homemaker. You don't have to be a runway model to feel good about yourself. What you have to be is convinced that Jesus died for you, that you're a daughter of the King, that you are blood bought, you are washed in Jesus' blood, you are forgiven, you are clean, you are bought with a price. And when you believe that, it's funny how things start working out. When you apply that, things start to change. Verse 11 says, and she made a vow saying, O Lord Almighty, if you'll only look upon your servant's misery and remember me and not forget your servant, but give her a son, then I will give him to the Lord for all the days of his life, and no razor will ever be used on his head. You ever make a deal with God? God, if you'll do this, I'll do this. I can't explain how all that works out. I know God doesn't honor all of our deals because all of our deals aren't honorable. But I do know there are times when we come and make a deal with God and he returns them. And I don't know why. Well, I'll tell you in a minute why I think this one happened. This was an unusual promise made in very unusual circumstances, but it does reveal a principle that is reflected throughout the Bible. Our children are not our own. They're on loan from God. And you and I are only stewards of them. Number one, bring your inadequacies to God. Number two, give your children back to God. Give your children back to God. No one really owns anybody else. But isn't it odd, just think for a minute with me, Mom, isn't it odd that part of being a mom is letting go of the very thing that makes you a mom? And that's just hard, isn't it? You come from childhood yourself, you move through your whole life, you anticipate the day that you become a mom, and then about the time that you begin to feel connected to that reality, then it seems like a flash goes by and it's time to let go again. Strange. Really, really plays a trick on our mind. But somehow in the cycle of life, it's God's way. And I don't know if you've noticed this or not. I was a youth pastor 10 years. Moms tend to hover. Have you seen this? But the truth is, one day that son's going to find the embrace of a woman and he won't be at home anymore. And that daughter is going to someday find a husband and the center of her life won't be at your house anymore. And if it's going to happen anyway, then moms have to begin to let go. Social scientists tell us that the de-parenting process starts somewhere around 12. Somewhere around 12, you have to start working yourself out of a job. And the roles change. And the conversation changes. And after Hannah's son was born, she kept her word and gave him back to God, and he went to live with the priest. Now, I don't know if you can picture Hannah's emotions here. I don't know if you can feel what she must feel. I can't imagine how Hannah felt. Year after year after year, that other woman torturing her because she couldn't have kids, she begging God, pleading with God, feeling like she had gone through a war, interceding, aching, hurting, broken, praying, pouring her heart out to God, only to have a son, only to have to keep her word and give him away. So Samuel went to live with the priest at the priest's house. I wonder how many nights Hannah laid there in bed and just missed him. Just wanted to hear his feet in the house. Just wanted to hold him again. Just wanted to smell him one more time. But he was gone. Some ways it kind of seems unfair, doesn't it? But Hannah proved something. Listen to this. She proved that she not only depended on God for the answer, she proved that even when the encounter was over, she was still living in dependency on God. Because she was saying, God, I depended on you when I had no child. I depend on you for a child. Now I depend on you. And I know that you're going to give me everything I need, and I'll release this child again. And that's the same way that it has to happen. Moms, you not only have to trust God with your inadequacies, but you also have to trust God with your kids. Now, what does it mean in this whole idea of releasing, letting children go? I remember when Stacy and I were in youth ministry, we had an encounter with a mom that didn't know how to let go. I've only in my entire ministry, I've only been accused twice of not really loving people. And that accusation came from the same mom over two of her kids. Seems ironic. They were angels in her sight. They could do no wrong. And the truth was, her son was so spoiled that, you know, God and Satan were trying to figure out who was going to get stuck with him. Anyway, but I'm okay. I'm over it. Really, it's good. She was a mom who didn't know how to let go, and she thought she had to fight all her kids' battles for them no matter how old they were. And that's not an easy thing to do, but I'm saying the same dependency that brought you to the place you are in God is the same dependency that's going to be needed to release your children and let them come to the place that they need to come to in God. And you can't do it by yourself. When you've got to hold on, hold on. When it's time to let go, let go. Bring your inadequacies to God. Give your children back to God. Now here's the last one. Believe that God is using you for great purposes, even when you can't see them. Believe that God is using you for great purposes, even when you can't see them. Let me tell you how that played out in Hannah's life. And here's the reason that I think that God entered that deal with Hannah. Israel was at a time of phenomenal and rapid change. And it was moving over from one system of government to another. One order, one season in history to another season. And in that time of change, what God needed in Israel was a godly leader to speak into those times and to speak His will and His purposes into those times. And if you ever want to do a fascinating study, do a study on the life of Samuel. He was the leader that God wanted for Israel. He was the leader that God needed, that Israel needed. But he was the son that Hannah wanted. And so right there, Hannah's intercession over her own children met God's purposes in the kingdom. And pow! And I just want you to know, Mom, there is greatness locked inside you, and your influence over your own children is more profound than you can possibly imagine, whether you are seeing it with your eyes or not. It is powerful. And God will use your prayers. God will use your patience. God will use your kindness. Believe that God is using you for great purposes, even if you can't see them. If you read Bible commentators, what they will tell you about Samuel is the greatest leader in the Bible in a time of change was Moses, who led the children of Israel from slavery and bondage into freedom. The second greatest leader in a time of change in the entire Bible is Samuel, Hannah's son. And when Hannah released over the reins of her son's life to God before he was even born, God met her in an encounter that changed her, changed her son, and changed the nation. Believe that God is using you for great purposes even when you can't see it. Even when you look in that bedroom and it looks like a thrift store blew up in there. Huh? I can find my kids by the trail of clothes down the hallway. I know exactly which way they went. That's not the deal. The deal is, in the middle of all that, God's using you. I guarantee it. God's using you for His great purposes. I'm going to ask the worship team to come this morning. Years ago, a young mother was making her way across South Wales. She was carrying a tiny infant in her arms. She was overtaken by a blinding blizzard. She never reached her destination, and when the blizzard subsided, her body was found by searchers beneath a mound of snow. But before her death, they discovered she had taken her clothes off, and she had wrapped that little baby up in those clothes, and she had covered that little baby inside that wad of clothes with her bare body, and she had then been buried in the snow. And when they dug her body out, she didn't survive. But the little baby inside those clothes, this is a true story, was alive and well. And that little child's name is David Lloyd George, who later became the Prime Minister of Great Britain. God is using you for His great purposes, even when you can't see it. He's using you. Believe it. Mom, I want to say today, thank you. Thank you for showing us a part of God that we have no other way to see without you. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your kindness. Thank you for your investment. I just wanted to come today and bless you and speak life over you, encourage you, and thank you for your gift, the gift of life, the gift of belief in us. So, would you all stand? And I want to ask every mom in the building, would you come for a minute and just join me here? I just want to pray for you, and we'll close. Moms, would you come?